Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 142. It's Tuesday night, so we're going to talk some Bloom board, some recent news, and have some fun getting you ready for this upcoming week of Fab action. You can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Hey, Ryan, how we doing, man?
Oh, you know, just another pre-show ailment, illness in the Bloomfield household. I feel like that's a recurring theme. Every time we have a show, I'm always telling you about something that went on. Today I had a tooth pulled unexpectedly. So in some pain, furthest right molar on the lower side, it's just gone. So it feels really weird to have a tooth for 34 years. I don't know when the adult teeth come in, but really weird to have a tooth for like 34 years and then all of a sudden you don't have it anymore. So that was today's medical emergency leading up to the show. So other than that, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I am doing well. Definitely, I guess, better than you technically in that kind of scenario, but yep, just living the dream. It was almost 100 here today, so that was fun. Good times in California these days with the weather. Just, it's going to be back to like 80 the next few days. So who knows what's going on out here. But yeah, you're just going to keep powering through. You're all, you know, hopped up on the goods. And we're gonna have some fun. Hopefully you don't whistle while you talk and all that kind of good stuff. So
I don't even know good. We can't whistle as well without teeth. I don't know.
That's the old joke. If you have a tooth, you can kind of just talk through. It'll whistle sometimes.
Dude, see, now you're already off on these like sayings and shit that I've never heard of. So,
well, that doesn't surprise me that you've never heard of these things. So it's okay. It's okay.
Dom in the chat. What's up to the chat, everyone? We've got Gialdi, Michael, Steven in there. Dom says, flu game number 3000 for Bloom this year. It feels like it. I'm always just on something when we're recording, but... Yep. Like always, we will make it through.
Yes, we will. And we will have some fun doing it like always here on Bubba and the Bloom. So let's start out with some news and notes. It was a busy day. I was telling Ryan before the show because I prepped my news for my Substack and for the First Pitch podcast, and I don't put nearly all of it on this show because we'd be here all day. It's a long one, but we'll start with some of the heavy hitters here. JT Realmuto, knee surgery on his patella. That's the knee for those that wanted to know. He's going to be out for around a month, give or take, they're saying. I could be a little longer being a catcher. I'd imagine you want that knee to be fully good to go, crouching behind the plate here. But he's going to be out for a bit. The replacements in Philadelphia don't seem great, and we've already talked about how it's been so hard to find catching replacements on the waiver wire this time of year. So it's a big blow, but are you holding JTR?
Yeah, yeah. I think in 15 teamers, you have to. Definitely in two catcher leagues, you have to. It's a month. Kind of came out, unless I missed something, came out of the blue, didn't it?
He was dealing with like a sore knee, missed a little bit of time last week, but then I kind of went hush catcher. Hush. I didn't hear a whole lot after that, yeah. And now he's having surgery. So
I absolutely think he's a hold just because like you just said, Bubba, I feel like this has bucked the trend of the last two seasons. I have had a lot of trouble trying to find a second catcher on a lot of waiver wires this year. I hit some Corey Lee. I missed the David Fry train, but I was trying to replace a few catchers last week, and it was just like Yasmani Grandal is the most owned available, and other part-time catchers. So for that reason, JTR is a hold. Kind of a normal JTR season, hitting 261 with 7 homers. The problem with JTR, just one steal, like the stolen bases, we're all talking like at some point that has to fall off given Realmuto's age, and it has fallen off with just one steal in, well, he's tried 3 times. He's 1-for-3. I don't see that magically jumping back coming off of knee surgery. So that's tough, but still a brutal loss given replacement level in two catcher leagues this year.
Yep, I'd hold him in 12s too. It's a tough one out there. Like I picked up Francisco Alvarez a couple weeks ago and just kind of rode that IL stint. He got activated on Tuesday. It's almost better to do that than going and picking up some of these options that are out there. If you have a Patrick Bailey, if you have a Corey Lee out there, those are okay options. But it's getting pretty bleak in the streets in the catching landscape. And maybe we'll find some for you this weekend, but nothing's popping out right now. Hurston Waldrop of the Atlanta Braves made his MLB debut over on the 9th, a couple days ago. 3 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 7 runs, a home run, 4 walks, and 1 strikeout. Now, Waldrop was pitching great in the minors. This debut did not go swimmingly for Waldrop. against the Washington Nationals, who just have the Braves number these days, which is pretty fun to see. So what's your thoughts on Waldrop? Obviously, he pitched on Sunday, so he wasn't available in the NFBC formats. I wasn't really in on Cade Povich, so I won't really be in on Waldrop probably. But what are you thinking there?
Yeah, I warned against Waldrop in my Fab column for on Baseball HQ on Sunday for in leagues that he was available. I don't know. We have not seen just in general, and maybe Waldrop bucks the trend or one of these guys. We'll talk about Drew Thorpe next. Bucks that trend, just has not been that impact rookie either, you know, hitter or starter coming off Fab this year. So yeah, very, very unimpressive debut for Waldrop, which you take with a massive grain of salt. We'll get another look at him Sunday. He's scheduled to go against the Rays. But then you pick up Waldrop this Sunday, and his next start would be at the Yankees, which I don't think is even startable, given the way that they can hit. So lukewarm on Waldrop, at least in redraft. And I also wonder what the, you know, how long is he staying? It's a somewhat crowded rotation in Atlanta compared to the next guy we'll talk about, Drew Thorpe. So for all those reasons, I'm probably bidding on Hurston Waldrop just because the state of the starting pitcher pool in 15 teamers, but it's going to be pretty tepid bids.
Yep, pretty tepid. Just like I said, I was really not in on Povich, won't be in on Waldrop. Drew Thorpe, I do like. Drew Thorpe was called up, made his debut on Tuesday for the Chicago White Sox. I had him in a lot of DCs and drafting holds in one of my later picks for Thorpe. He was traded from the Yankees in the Soto deal to the Padres, and then in the Dylan Cease deal to the White Sox. Thorpe's always been a guy I kind of like. I remember when that Chris Clegg came on my show earlier in the year. This is a guy, he's already stretched out. He's got the innings, yada, yada, yada. I was intrigued by him. He only pitched in Double-A for the White Sox. 11 starts, though. 1.35 ERA with 56 Ks and 60 innings pitched, which was nice. I've heard people go like, well, it's an okay fastball and a changeup. Like, it's not a whole lot to get excited about. But Thorpe on his debut in Seattle, 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, and 4 Ks. I think, you know, it's 98 pitches on a debut. I'll take that. The Mariners are a team you can usually rack up a bunch of strikeouts against, so you kind of hoped for a little more. But all things considered, I think that's a pretty solid debut on the road against the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, I had 11 whiffs on 98 pitches, so not terrible, even though Seattle is like, God, that lineup is so bad. But no, Thorpe looked decent tonight. You mentioned the changeup. It was weird. He threw the changeup more than any other pitch. He threw 38 changeups, just 28 four-seamers, and then a mix of sliders and cutters. So I feel like the arsenal is well-rounded enough to get through lineups 2-3 times in the order. I think most importantly, Drew Thorpe, like, the White Sox have to keep him in the rotation, right? Like, yep. What else are they going to do with the guy? So
I know I wasn't alone, but many were yelling for Drew Thorpe to be called up weeks ago. Like, what's the point of, like you said, in that rotation? And I mentioned, you know, we want to talk about his overall workload last year in 2023. He threw 100 almost 40 innings between High A and Double A now. So some people might say, oh, he didn't go to Triple A. Who cares? Like, it's the White Sox are a Triple A team. So just let him play.
You could argue he is in AAA right now. I would prioritize for this year. I would prioritize Drew Thorpe over Waldrop. And it's funny reading scouting reports. It sounds like Waldrop's probably the better long-term prospect.
Probably.
But I just think, for redraft leagues, I'm going to go Thorpe. He would go. We'll see Thorpe again on Sunday at Arizona. And then Thorpe gets at Detroit, which a much easier matchup than Waldrop's at.
I will say, we keep saying Detroit's easy, but they're not a walk in the park. They're at least an average, if not better than average, offense versus righties over the past month. But yes, I would take that over some of these other matchups for sure. Andrés Muñoz, this was a fun one. Dang. Like, I'm being sarcastic when I read this a day or so ago. So he's never put on the IL. He's kind of shut down for a few days with a back injury that had happened live on our Thursday show last week. And then Munoz out of nowhere came in and pitched the eighth inning on Sunday. Looked okay. On Monday, the Mariners said Munoz is still being bothered by his back, and he is considered day-to-day. So they're not going to IL him right now. They're just going to let him hang out, and when he's okay, he's going to pitch. Not sure if he's pitching the ninth, whatever. As we speak, Tuesday evening, it's 9:12 p.m. Pacific time. Ryan Stanek's in for the save right now for the Seattle Mariners. This Munoz situation is not good. Like, why would you not put him on the IL? I don't get it, but I just wanted to throw that out to people that It's probably too late this week, but I would not be having him rostered, at least starting at this point in time.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, agreed. Probably too late, but yeah, just weird, weird usage of Andres Munoz in a back injury that, again, tends to not go away, to just throw him out there and then say his back's still bothering him. So I said, you said Stanek is in there currently. Yep.
He was save-op. The last second I looked, he was in the save op in the ninth, one run lead.
Yeah, so I think it's primarily Stanek, although who got the save? There's a lefty. Taylor Saucedo on Sunday got a two-pitch save, so probably just matchup-based there. So it's probably a healthy dose of Ryan Stanek. He is, and Saucedo's the only lefty in that bullpen at all right now. So, like, that even, I think, brings the case for Saucedo, not just, you know, they're not going to hold him to the ninth. They're probably going to use him in the sixth, seventh, eighth, whenever there's a high leverage lefty situation. So Stanek, what's Stanek's numbers this year? Pretty decent.
Yeah, not bad.
Pretty decent. Missing bats, 14% swinging strike, throw strikes, 34% ball rate, 4.38 ERA. He's been a better pitcher than that. Stanek's not like a, you know, elite closer or anything like that, but I think he's good enough if he gets the ball for 2-3 weeks, he can grab some saves there.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Saucedo pitched the eighth on Tuesday night. So, like you said, more of a situational thing as the only lefty in that pen. So Stanek's the dude. I know I added him in one or two 15s this past week. I think there's some viability if he needs some saves. He'll be the man for now in that situation. I just want to mention Yainer Diaz because he's not on the IL either, but he's missed a couple games as he's dealing with an injury. And Cesar Salazar was called up from AAA to be a backup catcher for the Houston Astros. Salazar had 6 homers, a stolen base, and a .274 average at AAA this season. People are pretty excited about him. He's 28, though, so I don't know how excited we should be. But until Yainer goes on the IL, I'm not too excited about Salazar, let's put it that way.
No. I'm semi-excited about Victor Caratini. I guess
he's playing well.
You know, if you have a JT Realmuto or Yainer Diaz himself, Caratini has 6 barrels already and 99 plate appearances, hitting .236, 4 homers, decent counting stats, a 13% strikeout rate. So he doesn't K that often. Again, second catcher despair, but like Victor Caratini, if this Yainer Diaz thing is something, becomes the primary catcher in Houston and will be on my bid list in leagues where I have JTR and Yainer Diaz, which is a few of them.
Yep, that is a definite situation in our hands there. Another situation on the feet, not so much the hands, would be Hunter Renfroe, who on Monday fouled 2 balls off of his foot in the same at-bat. That is nice. Talent, folks.
Nice.
That is talent. So he went on the IL with a fractured big toe, and Drew Waters got the call. Many people should remember Drew Waters' name from the preseason as we were arguing, would he make the starting roster, this, that, and the other. In 50 games at AAA this year, Waters hitting .277, 7 home runs and 9 stolen bases. We know he can run, got a little bit of pop. He should get to hit regular at-bats. I believe he's in the starting lineup on Tuesday night. Yep. Who knows how long Renfroe will be out for. So Drew Waters, another outfielder to add this week, potentially, at least put on the list, all things considered.
Yeah, Waters did start it. I think this is probably a platoon still in right field. Waters going against righties, and I think a lot of people still want De'Ron Blanco to get to snag an everyday role. I just don't think it's happening. Blanco did not start against a righty on Tuesday night. So Drew Waters in weeks where, again, assuming the Renfroe thing, if he's out for a while, in right-hand pitching heavy weeks, Drew Waters, I feel, is like a, I don't know, like a Brenton Doyle type, like, hey, some
nice
speed.
To Brenton Doyle. Be nice.
Hey, Brenton Doyle. Actually, Brenton Doyle has like a bunch of bags this year. So maybe I shouldn't be so hard on him. I just think like the plate skills aren't there for Drew Waters. Like there's some power speed, but I don't think the batting average is going to carry over very well. Waters has a over 30% strikeout rate for his career in the majors, struck out 27% of the time in AAA this year, despite hitting .277. So I don't know, some power speed there, but I think this is more like a fifth outfielder, 15 team or AL only type of ad Waters is.
So maybe we shouldn't go chasing waterfalls. Is that what we're saying there?
No, I would dip my toe in other waters.
There you go. Well played. Ben Brown was a popular fab target a week or two ago. Ben Brown is now on the IL with a neck injury. That's a bummer. That puts good old Jordan Wicks back in the rotation for the Chicago Cubs, which was already the concern before the injury. Now it's his jam. I actually dropped Ben Brown this last week, not even knowing he'd be going on the IL. So I even said on my Monday show, I dropped him in the 12. I'm like, we'll see how this goes. And then the next day I'm like, well, that makes me feel a little better about life. But
how long is he out for? Is it bad?
It's a neck injury. I haven't seen like the bad of it. It just says, all it is it's a neck injury. I haven't heard the full length anywhere, but it's at least 15 days, at least 15 days. He's been battling it off and on over the last few weeks. He's been sent back to Chicago to get tests. Yeah, so it's a left neck strain.
All right. Well, maybe I'll give him some of my painkillers that I've got here and get him back soon. Because Ben Brown's been awesome, man. Like, I actually think Ben Brown in a 15-teamer, I'm holding. If assuming it's like the minimum or maybe 2-3 weeks, Ben Brown was really, really good. 10.5 strikeouts per 9. FIP down near 3 ERA, service ERA 3.58, and you just don't see that very often on the wire. So
8 runs in his last 2 starts with 9 Ks and 9 innings.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of bad luck.
Both against the Reds too. That's kind of funny, actually. Both starts versus the Reds. So no, I like Ben Brown, but it's one of those in a 12. I was playing roulette. And like I told you off air, like a lot of my guys were starting to get healthy. So there was guys that had to be cut, and Brown was kind of a casualty on that one, unfortunately. But
you can always pick him back up, as everyone says. You can always
get it'll cost me more, but I could do it. That's the truth. Now things get interesting. Brian Wu was scratched from his start on Tuesday evening with more issues with his elbow, the same issues that happened right before he got activated. They're like, his elbow's sore. We both thought he was done. And then he goes and pitches pretty well for a while. But as Dom in the chat says, service had a very strange interview today. They didn't IL Wu or Munoz, but had to DFA a bunch of relievers to cover themselves since they're real taxed on pitching. It's a very bizarre situation in Seattle, as we kind of come to expect these days. But I don't feel good about this, Ryan, because it's like he had it before. He pitched through it. Now we're back at it again. It just feels like eventually it's going to win.
Usually does. And I will, I've admitted on the show, I was out on Brian Wu after his first start when he left with arm issues. And it's interesting. I was looking through the Fangraphs player rater this earlier today, because that's what you do when you're laid up in bed and have, have throbbing mouth pain, apparently, if you're deranged like I am. Brian Wu is a top 20 starting pitcher in the Fangraphs player rater this year. That's how good Brian Wu has been. It's only been 33 innings, man. 107 ERA, 0.53 whip. Just an awesome, awesome run for Wu. But yeah, I'm very concerned. We obviously at this time we don't know. We was going to get an MRI on his arm. Don't really even know what part of his arm. I think you normally get an MRI on a certain part of it. But we'll see. It's certainly ominous, and I do get like some, I don't know, I hate to say it, but like some ticking time bomb vibes with Wu. It's just,
that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, it already happened once. He got away with it. It's just eventually it's going to go. So we'll see how that goes. Randy Rosarena scratched from Tuesday's game with a hamstring injury. He did pinch hit though, went 0-for-1. The thing is, since June 1st, Randy's hitting .308, 2 doubles, 3 runs in RBI. No homers, no steals, but 17.6% walk, 11.8% K. Seemed like he might be slowly getting things going again. So that's a massive bummer with Randy Rosarena going down, but not a whole lot you can do there because it looks like it's just a day-to-day situation.
Yeah, and I always like to see if they actually do pinch hit, then I'm actually not really that worried about it. And yes, Randy has turned things around slightly lately for anyone looking for a sign of life. Randy is also on tonight's Bloom Board as the lowest guy for BABIP and homer to fly ball compared to his personal baseline the last 3 years, which we'll get to in a second. But yeah, Randy's on there.
All right, and then another guy that's on our list we're about to talk about. I saw Jerickson guy here. Yeah, so I just looked at Jerickson Pro for
Curlin. Just tweeted a video about it.
I just read some tweets from some beat writers. Jerickson Pro for left Tuesday night's game after swinging at a pitch, non-contact injury. For those that know football, you know what that usually means. His knee buckled and he was taken out of the game. That does not bode well. It sounds like a lot always could be day to day. You never know, but a non-contact buckling in the situation. Yeah. Ryan's, you know, Curlin probably copyrighted that.
Look at this. I'm caught.
Oof. Yeah. That's not pretty.
I'm committing copyright theft on someone, probably committing copyright theft.
Exactly.
So here we go. Here's the video for the YouTube crowd of Jurickson Profar clutching his knee as he swings and misses on a pitch. That does not look good.
That's bad. Bad stuff there. So keep an eye on that, folks. We'll probably get more info on that on Wednesday. But David Peralta, as the chat is saying, not the answer, folks. Not the answer on that one. They might have to get some trading going on here if Profar's out, because weirdly enough, the Padres are still kind of competitive right now. There's like a boring, quiet team, but they're making noise, which is the interesting part on that one. Yeah, and then Dom's saying, I told Ryan off the air, Ohapi took a pitch to his nuts. Yeah, the Orange County Register guy says, Ohapi just took a foul ball in a place where you shouldn't take a ball, and he looks like he's in a lot of pain. So it's been a bloodbath, folks. Tuesday has been a rough day when it comes to injury news and everything. So T's and P's if you're out there and trying to grind this one out. Let's look at maybe some more positive stuff here, Ryan. Let's talk some bloom boards for a Tuesday evening here. So what do we got on the board for this evening?
All right, here's the deal. Got it thrown up here. So you'll hear us mention these all the time when we're evaluating hitters, is we'll talk about BABIP and homer to fly ball rate. So those are two kind of result-based metrics that BABIP obviously is, I shouldn't say obviously, for folks that are either new to the show or whatever, it's your batting average on balls in play. Your league average on it is roughly around 300. I think it's like 290 this year, but whatever, for rule of thumb. And typically any hitter that's way below where they normally sit. So every hitter establishes their own, even though the league average is 300, every hitter establishes their own. So like Tim Anderson, who's actually on this list, the height, the peak Tim Anderson was like a 350 BABIP guy. That's what he was every single year. So you would expect him to be 350 going forward. It's not something where you expect every hitter to fall back to average at 300. So every hitter establishes their own baseline for BABIP and for home run to fly ball rate. And so BABIP is obviously very tightly correlated with batting average. We'll cite BABIP whenever we see someone like Jurickson Profar with a major spike in batting average and say, oh, that's a high BABIP. That's probably going to, the R word, regress back to where it normally is for Jurickson Profar. So it's just a nice way to kind of identify guys who should be getting more hits or should not be getting more hits based on their own baseline. And same thing for homer to fly ball rate. Your league average on homer to fly ball rate this year is a little bit lower because of the ball, I think. It's down near like 10, 11%, but in previous years has been around 12%. And again, that is simply the number of fly balls, what percentage of the fly balls that you hit are home runs. And same thing for BABIP. A hitter establishes their own home run to fly ball rate over time. So obviously like an Aaron Judge has a much higher homer to fly ball rate baseline than, I don't know, who am I going to pick on? Cedric Mullins. I don't know. It's just a name on the list here. But what this board is doing then is what we're looking at is we are looking at the hitters that have changed the most, both positive, which is for those of you looking at YouTube, that's the green, the top 10 that we'll talk about, and negative in red, the bottom 10. The changes, the players that have deviated the most from their own baseline, BABIP and homer to fly ball rate over the last 3 years. And so typically, and the reason why we're doing this as a topic on the podcast is we'll talk through kind of most of these guys and which ones, you know, we say can kind of continue to buck the trend or which ones are going to fall back. Typically, you expect in the aggregate, you expect most of these guys to fall back or fall up to what their personal baseline is. So even though the guys in green are green and green is good and that sort of thing, these are probably, again, in the aggregate, guys who are over their skis right now, much higher BABIPs, much higher homer to fly ball rates than they typically have shown in the past, and thus should probably fall back a little bit. Vice versa, on the other side, the guys in red are hitting well below their personal baselines. And if regression works both ways, we would expect these guys to rise up closer to their personal baseline the rest of the way. Again, always exceptions once you dig into hard hit skills and barrels and crap like that. But that's what we'll do tonight when we dive into some of these players.
Yep, I totally agree. Joe Rico's got gold out the gate here. Enter show late, sees two Blue Jays on the bad side, exit stage left. It's just a normal show talking Rico, Toronto Blue Jays.
Again, the bad side could be the good side if you are of the in the camp that these guys have been worse than they normally are, and thus will get better. I'm skeptical on one of the two, which we'll talk about.
And then I already agree with Carlos Marcano. We'll get to it later, but all I can get from the board is that Ryan McMahon is the god of hitting. That's what I've been saying for like the last 4 years, and I get laughed at every time. So yes, I agree.
Is he on this list? Where the hell is he? Oh yeah, he's the lowest green guy. Yeah,
yep, he's awesome. He's awesome. All right, let's have some fun here. And I know Jerickson Profar just got hurt, but this is an interesting one to talk about here because he's hitting 322, 10 homers, got four steals, even if you want to have fun with that. But you see the jump in BABIP, like you mentioned, 273 to 355. When I see a jump in BABIP, I start thinking, okay, he's hitting the ball on the ground hard or something. His home run to fly ball has gone up 7% to 15%. His career ground ball rate's pretty much the same for the last few years. Does have more barrels, does have a harder hit rate. But it's pretty crazy with the way we think the baseballs aren't going so well. And the, you know, like I said, the batted ball profile hasn't changed a ton for Profar to see the home run to fly ball jump so much, at least in my opinion. That's what I'm seeing. What are you seeing on Profar here now? It's tough to do this on one leg, so this might not even matter. But yeah, like, even like his XBA is 301, which isn't horrible. So like, there's something to like there.
I guess like Jerickson Profar is always he's a big contact guy, but I don't see much change at all in the batted ball profile to justify this massive jump in BABIP. Jerickson Profar hit 243 the previous three seasons. Jerickson Profar hit 227, 243, and 242 with BABIPs at 273. So he's been below average for the last 3 years, and all of a sudden he's one of the top guys in the game at this age. I don't believe it. We had a comment from Rob DiPietro when I posted this on Twitter that Jerickson Profar is also like the highest sprint speed gainer, which actually leads me to believe that this is not actually Jerickson Profar playing this season. It's somebody else who is just wearing Profar's jersey. I don't see how like this guy has reinvented himself. I don't see. So the batted ball profile is the exact same ground ball rate for Profar as last year, exact same hard hit rate for Profar as the last two seasons. There's just nothing to me like, yes, a few more barrels. So maybe I'd buy into a couple more homers. There's just nothing to me that stands out and says, yes, this is a change that I believe in for Profar. I think like I'll pose this question back to you, Bob. If we took the split of Profar's last two seasons batting average, rest of season, so if I split 242 and 322, that's like a 280 batting average. Would you go over under on 280 for Profar the rest of the way? Again, assuming he's healthy.
Over. I'll go over. I think he's actually pretty good. I think he's this good? No, I agree with you. There should be regression coming because, like we both said, the profile is pretty darn similar to years past. Like the barrels are up, though, so that's a positive. But at the same time, like the jump in home run to fly ball is pretty wild. We've seen this in years past, like in the offseason, we'll look at players and look at how they've done and try to decide if this is for real or not. And there's a bunch of those guys out of nowhere. This would stand out in a big way type situation. But I still think he's not the 242 guy. I'll say he's like 285, 290, something in there. Okay. And I'd take that for sure. I know it's a big dip if you've been using him, but a guy still hitting 280, 290 the rest of the year, the way the batting average complex is this year. I take that in a heartbeat. So,
yep,
I'm in.
And I mean, the other thing too is like if you already drafted Profar, like kudos because you are more than playing with house money right now. You have made out pretty well with that pick.
And Arico says in the chat he still has a terrible sprint speed though, 31st percentile. So, yeah, compared to where it was, it says a lot. Now this is fun. Stephen Kwan, he's hitting 370 with four homers after Tuesday evening. He went 3-for-4. He's hitting 380 now on the season. To go with his 390 BABIP, that did not change after tonight. So his BABIP went from 308 to 390, but he's hitting 380, which is almost in line with the BABIP, which is nuts. 3% home run to fly ball last few years on average to 9% this year because he got four home runs. Last year he had five. The year before he had six. So he's way ahead of his home run pace. He's not running as much, but the batting average is there. This is a guy like I liked a ton for his batting average skills. Did I expect it to be this? No, not even close.
Yeah.
So, what's your thoughts on this? Because this is a wild change. Just like he's elevating the ball more, like ground balls are less, and his BABIP went up.
Yeah, that's the big thing that I wanted to point out with Stephen Kwan was yes, fewer ground balls, but also not as many fly, just a few more fly balls. It's the line drive rate. And if you break BABIP down, like fly balls have the worst BABIP of anything, because obviously fly balls that aren't home runs are caught like almost all the time. Line drives are by far, like, that's the sweet spot. Line drives, I think, have like a 700 BABIP or whatever. And Stephen Kwan, that's been the main driver of his batting average surge. Guy never strikes out anyway, never whiffs. But the line drive rate has gone up from 23% 2 years ago to 25%, up to 30% this year. So not only is Stephen Kwan making contact like all the time, it's not the hardest to contact. Like, he's only had four barrels all season. So from a power standpoint, I think this is still Stephen Kwan. But to be able to hit that many line drives and put the ball in play that often, I'm not going to say Stephen Kwan's a 380 hitter, but like, this could be Luis Arraez type numbers with more counting stats the rest of the way. So like, I think Kwan could hit 320, 330 the rest of the way. I don't see why he wouldn't do that.
Yep, I'm with you. And it's funny you mentioned Luis Arraez. I wanted to bring this up real quick. He's got a 344 BABIP this year, 362 last year, 331, 323, 353. And this is one of the best batting average guys in baseball year after year that we talk about. So to see Kwan with a 390 is crazy compared to Luis Arraez, who at 354 last year with a 362 BABIP. So you're getting some just out of this world production from Stephen Kwan right now.
And leading off, so I know he missed, I forget how many, did he miss like 2 or 3 weeks?
About a month. Okay. Yeah.
So missed a month. Still has 37 runs scored leading off. I don't think we
That was my argument for him, is his batting average and his run production. That was my argument for Stephen Kwan in the preseason. So my teams that I do have him, especially in drafts and holds, I'm pretty pumped, but no power. Actually, the power is better than I thought, so it's weird. Very weird stuff from Stephen Kwan. Marcelo Zuna, this is the big boy. He's hitting 312 on the season, 18 homers. BABIP's up to 346 after a 269 average. Home run to fly balls up to 25% after a 19% average. And it's pretty wild, Ryan, because you look at the batted ball profile, not a lot has changed there. Even the, quality of contact, the hard hit rate's up, but overall things are pretty similar to seasons previous, it feels like, with Marcelo Zuna. He's just finding more holes with the balls he's hitting, which is pretty wild because no one in Atlanta is.
So I think, agreed, which I think the stat around Atlanta making the rounds today was they are last in runs scored since like late April,
March 1st.
The exact date or something. March 1st.
That was the that's the stat that everyone's doing. March 1st, like last
May runs, 1st,
like May 1st. Sorry, yes, May 1st. But it's like batting average, runs, and one other stat. They're like 28th. They're 28th or worst in baseball.
Yeah, but definitely not Marcelo Zuna's fault. I buy the power uptick more than I buy the batting average uptick. I don't think this is a 300 hitter or even all that close to it. But I think Ozuna, like, he already has 33 barrels to those 18 home runs. Like, the power has always been really good. It's even gotten better this year. I mean, the dude hit 40 home runs last year. I don't see why Ozuna can't go right back to hitting 40. I don't think he's a 312 hitter or whatever. Hit 274 last year. I think that's probably what I would expect going forward with Ozuna, which, again, I don't want to shade the guy. Like, well, wish I could shade the guy. He's not the best dude out there, but no, if you go 270 the rest of the way with 20-25 more home runs, that is awesome production. So someone who you are happy to have clog your utility spot.
Yep, that makes a ton of sense. Paul DeJong makes a Bloom board. I'm so excited about this because I've gotten so many nasty comments from my co-host about rostering Paul DeJong and Tout because there's no options in Tout. And he went deep again for his 13th of the year on Tuesday night. But coming into this Bloom board, 12 homers with a 235 average. Normal BABIPs around 234. It's up to 293 this year. He's only had two BABIPs higher than that in his entire career. 13% homer to fly ball on average, 20% this year. If you look at his batted ball profile, Ryan, a lot less ground balls, like 9%, more fly balls. Like, he's selling out for power is what it feels like, and it's working so far. That's not a recipe for long-term success more often than not. And let's be real, he's going to get traded. Colson Montgomery's coming up sooner than later, but DeJong has been pretty good. Obviously, regressions. I think batting average regression, if you want, sure. Power, to me, this is Paul DeJong's always had that power. It's just the whole package has never been there.
He does totally sell out for it. Like, a ton of fly balls, 30, percent plus strikeout rate. Like, I don't see how this dude continues to hit 235. It's bad to have that big of a jump in BABIP, yet you're still only hitting 235. So, like, yes, Paul DeJong could, and even in tout, dude, 4% walk rate. The guy doesn't walk at all.
Oh, his OBP is horrible. Horrible.
So, I mean, he's totally selling out for power, but power is decent. But, like, dude, if he hits 200 the rest of the way, which is pretty much, he's hit below 200 from 2021 through 2023. Like, that is destroying your batting average and thus your above. Since, you know, if I don't win tout, I want you to win tout, destroying your OBP. I don't think the power, even if it does stay at this level the rest of the way, which I'm still skeptical of, I don't think that's worth it, man.
Let's just put it this way. He's replacing Vaughn Grissom, so it's been worth it. That's where we're at on this one. That's the problem. Yeah,
well, I can't argue. Yes.
Yeah, that's God, the problem.
That guy. Jesus. Yeah.
Brutal stuff there. What's not brutal is Jock Jams. Jock Jams hitting 283 on the season, 7 home runs. The BABIP's entertaining to me. 286 up to 364 this year. Home run to fly ball is pretty much 15%, 17%. Like, yeah, that's the same as his batted ball metrics, his quality of contact metrics. That just supports the home runs that Jock does. The BABIP is wild for Jock Peterson. And I think what's really crazy, 364 BABIP, but 283 average. I kind of hope for a little more in that grand scheme of things. But this is just Jock. Like, you know, in 2022 at 274 with a 310 BABIP. So there will be regression, but he could be a 260 dude with the same amount of power. It also helps they put him in primo situations to help him succeed by facing just right-handed pitching. So that's another angle to look at with Jock Peterson.
Yep, agreed. And agreed that the power, that, I mean, this is what we expected of him. I think Jock Peterson probably the rest of the way is like a 250 hitter over 280. I don't see like a huge change in power metrics or batted ball mix to say like this BABIP is that much better. I mean, this is basically the same barrel rate, same hard hit rate that we had last year, a few more line drives, but it's the difference is so small. I don't think it explains such a big jump in BABIP for Peterson. So I think we've probably seen the best from Peterson that we'll see this year. And you tack on the lefty righty platoon. Like, you can't really start him in weeks where the Diamondbacks play a few lefties. So not to rain on the Jock Jams parade. I know he's your guy, but
he's not. I have zero shares of Jock Jams.
Well, you call him Jock Jams. You must like him.
Well, because he's been fun, and that's a great thing to tweet when you get Jock Jams dongs. Like, it's fun. It's fun, Ryan. Fantasy baseball is fun.
Yeah. Yes, it is. We try to make it fun, too. I'm surprised you didn't call Paul DeJong Paul DeDong like you did before the show.
Hey, I've done that many times. For the old Quick Hits listeners, you've heard all of my nicknames throughout the years. When I record at 1 o'clock in the morning, you get all the goods on that show. Trust me. So, yeah, Paul DeDong has been a lifetime, you know, $2,400 player on DK that you enjoy. But yes, Christian Yelich, this is a fun one. I'm gonna let you have the floor first here, since I've talked a lot about some of these players, but there's something that stands out in a big way when we see the 16% average home run to fly ball, 21% this year, the BABIP of 331 to 383. One thing I'll say before I do, the dude hits way too many ground balls. Like, I knew he did, but I just looking at it again, I'm like, good Lord, it's like a 56% ground ball rate. That's insane. But what is it that you see when you look at Yelich's profile and that might stand out in this situation?
To me, it is all the ground balls. Like, 55% ground ball rate this year. Like, so that will help your BABIP, but not to the extent that Yelich, that we've seen from Yelich. Like, I don't think this is a, there's been no change in Yelich's strikeout rate. I don't think this is a 315 hitter. I think he goes back to maybe what he was last year, 280. The power, I don't believe in either. Yes, the homer to fly ball rate is up versus Yelich's career, but 6 home runs on just 7 barrels. Like, that's pretty scant power for Yelich. The one thing that I do like, and this was a concern for me given all the injuries that Yelich has had, is he is running more often than ever and running successfully. I think he's 10 for 11 on the base paths with a pretty green light for Milwaukee. So I could see Yelich getting like 25 steals. And so even, you know, you cap that with, yeah, batting average that maybe falls to like 270, 280 and non-zero power despite all those ground balls. Quietly another pretty damn good year for Christian Yelich, who I feel like continues to get panned. But the green light for me is huge because it's a sign that he's healthy. And the back issue has always been something that I've been worried about with Yelich.
A couple things I want to mention. 2020 at a 259 BABIP. Other than that, it's been all 320 or above. 21 and 22, 321, 327 BABIP. The lowest are usually 340 or higher. So 383, if it drops down to 340, like you said, still hits 275. What stood out to me is we're talking to averages here. So we're going to talk home run to fly ball. He has 20.7% this year, 20.2 last year. 2022 was 14.7, and 2021 was 13.2. And I remember we've talked about Yelich a few times on preview shows over the last couple of years that, like, this is kind of who he is. Like, look at it. And that part, I think people will see that 16 to 21% difference, the 5% difference, might not be as big as it should be if we look at who he was last year. And that's just one thing I want to point out is, if you look at the profile we saw, the production from last season, as long as the back holds up, that might be the guy you're getting this year, which is a pretty dang good ball player. So you could take some regression for sure. But I think the power profile, yes, 6 homers on 7 barrels. We've done that discussion many times, and that's not going to cut it long term. But I still think, like, people will see the board and look at, like, oh, he's getting a major regression in home run to fly ball. Maybe not as much as you think. So something to keep in mind there.
No, that's a really good point. That's the issue, is looping all these guys into the same, like, buckets of years is, yeah, you do miss out on that. The counter is exactly that, Bubba, is this is the second year in a row that Yelich has held a 20% homer to fly, which, again, is pretty damn impressive despite all the ground balls.
As with the back injury, too. Real quick, Jurickson Profar, latest news on Jurickson Profar just dropped. Mike Schultz said after the game, it is a sore left knee that Profar has been dealing with for a while. He is day-to-day now.
So he's doing all this on a bad knee.
Yeah. I still want to see the testing that will take place on Wednesday, but if it is just a sore knee, misses a couple games, that's just hilarious to me. That, hey, my knee buckles all the time, but I'm also, well, Jerks are probably closer to my age than I think, but we'll just leave it at that one. Juan Soto, just freak human being, playing with a talk about bad knee for Profar. Soto's playing with a busted forearm, basically. Soto's hitting 318 with 17 home runs this season, 292 BABIP on average, 331 this year, 22% home run to ball, 25% home run to fly ball. Like, you can pick this apart all you want. I'll let you have the floor, Ryan, but I think this dude's just a beast. He's in his zone. He's kind of been he was uncomfortable in San Diego, it seemed like, and he's just doing beastly things again.
And some of this is park based, right? Because especially the homer to fly, and that's probably something we haven't brought up yet at all with any of these guys, because they probably haven't switched teams that often. But ballpark can play a big factor, just like we talked in homer to barrel. Ballpark can play a big factor in homer to fly ball rate for obvious reasons. So Juan Soto going to Yankee Stadium is obviously a great thing for his homer rate. I made this point before draft season, and so far have been proven to be very wrong, that Juan Soto's batting average could tank because of the short porch in right field. The BABIP for left-handed hitters in the Yankee Stadium is actually one of the worst in baseball. Yep. That has not affected Juan Soto at all. And I think, like, I don't know, traditional analysis when you're analyzing Hall of Fame talent like this kind of goes out the window. He's been amazing, man. I, you know, I'm not the biggest Yankee fan out there, but it is pretty damn cool to see Soto and Judge doing what they're doing back to back every night.
It also goes back to show us, like, maybe calling out a 25-year-old's profile,
yes,
might not be the best thing. And I'm not saying you in general, because I saw the BABIP comment mentioned by almost anybody that wanted to pick apart anything they could find on Soto, and it's like, the dude's 25. And he's been, you know, there's a lot of things that can play into that one. And hey, I'm not innocent on these things either, but I'm just saying, maybe we should take a step back on some of these young ball, like Profar, go to town, have fun. Like, that's very fair.
Go for his other knee.
Yeah. Go get him, go get him, Tanya. Yeah.
We'll see where that goes. 2 weeks in a row with a Tanya Harding reference.
You're going to make it 3 for 3 here. Just watch. Adley Rutschman and when you have a dong bong in the dugout, you're going to hit so many home runs. It's absolutely amazing. And that's what they call it. So don't even. I've lost Ryan, everybody. Don't even look at me like I'm trying to say something inappropriate here. The Orioles legit have one in the dugout. So if they drink water, of course, because they're serious ball players. But Adley Rutschman, I'm surprised he's the only one on this list, honestly. 306 average, 13 home runs right now. Like, Gunnar Henderson has 21 home runs now. How's he not? Like, the fact he's on this list is pretty impressive. Rutschman, 298, BABIP to 332, 11% home run to fly to 15%. Again, he's 26. He's, you know, one thing I do want to look at real quick, I got it here. You know what it could be? He's only walking 5.5%. Maybe he's not taking as many pitches. The aggressiveness could be huge.
Well, and this goes back to exactly what you were saying. Now that I've recovered from your bong dong
dong bong
comment, dong bong, whatever
they have T-shirts of it that say
dong bong. Yeah, no, they've got that, and they've got cows in the stands for Cowser. It's a weird.
I need to go to Baltimore. Place. Apparently, these are my people.
Fun fact: I spent part of my bachelor party at Camden Yards.
There you go. Part. I love that. Off the air, if we ever get a Patreon, we'll hear the other parts.
We'll do the other parts. Party. Yeah, that may be for advanced subscribers, not in the public realm. For details on that one, your Juan Soto comment about age 25, I think perfectly applies to Adley Rutschman as well. And especially the big reason I was off of Adley Rutschman is I thought he was way too passive at the plate. These huge walk rates, which don't do anything for you in 5x5 batting average leagues, especially for someone that doesn't run. Given the price tag for Rutschman, I was off of him. But to what you were just saying about Soto at 25, like, who's to say Adley Rutschman, you know, can't just be more aggressive at the plate, swing more, which is what he's doing, take fewer walks, still hold a great strikeout rate. Yeah, he's whiffing a little bit more, but you take this newfound aggressiveness from Adley Rutschman. Who's to say these super young, talented players can't change and improve from year to year? That's always one of your things. And so that's been one of my big misses with Adley Rutschman. It has been a damn impressive step forward for Adley. Like, The power looks legit. The more aggressive plate skills look great. I like that he's not walking as much. Who's to say he can't hit 332? That's another thing. I'm not going to fall into the trap of saying Adley Rutschman is a, what's his Babbitt baseline here? 298. He's probably a lot better than that because this is, again, just someone who has been in the league for 3 years total. So who's to say that can't improve either? So super impressive stuff. Gonna be interesting battle for number one catcher next year, probably between Adley and your guy Big Willie. No,
that's not that close. It is, but it's not. No, stop it. Adley's number two, but it's close. Like, I'll give him his credit, but it's still William. William's the beast. He plays every day. But yeah, I was wrong on Adley. I was wrong on Gunner. Santander is about the only Oriole I have shares of that's working out because I don't have shares of Gunner or Adley, and that's a big miss on my part. But yeah, it's impressive to see the development on him for sure. Kevin Newman, Ryan McMahon round out the list here. Did you have anything you wanted to add on these guys? Because otherwise we'll talk some potential positive regression, guys.
No, we've already anointed Ryan McMahon as the god of hitting in the chat from Carlos. So we'll cap that one there. He's, Kevin Newman, no, I don't have much there.
Newman's going back to the bench with Perdomo back anyway, so that does not matter. But Ryan McMahon, one thing I'll say is I say it every time when we talk preseason, it's just a consistent, boring stat line, and he's actually overachieving that stat line right now. So expect regression, but the dude's still just the same, like, consistent, productive dude out there. So have fun with that one. All right, let's flip the script on this one now, Bloomfield, and let's have some fun here. Lane Thomas is the top of the board here on the red side of things, and this is a guy that missed a lot of time due to injury. He's hitting 218 on the year. He did go one for two on Tuesday night, but 307 BABIP, 255 this year, 14% home run to fly in the past, 9% this year. I think there's some injury to do with that, and I also think that we will see some improvements. He's elevating the ball a lot more, which could be part of his problem. Obviously, it's like the old Willie Mays Hayes syndrome right here, but hard hit rate's still fine. Barrel rate's slightly down, but probably more because of the infield fly ball situation. He's been playing pretty darn good since he came back off the IL. I'm very optimistic still on Lane Thomas.
I am too. And he is running like crazy.
Yes. The Nats are running like crazy.
The Nats Jesse are running like crazy.
Is running like crazy.
Yeah. Actually, the one who's not is CJ Abrams.
Yeah. Well, he's got to get on base for that.
Yeah, that's true. He had the power binge early on, so he didn't steal, and now he can't get on base.
He went full Willie Mays Hayes.
Lane Thomas has basically a 50% stolen base attempt rate, which is basically 50% of the time he gets on first base, he's running, which is a full send. Already has 15 steals and just 158 plate appearances because Thomas has missed so much time on the IL. I'm also not worried about Lane Thomas either. The strikeout rate is fine. The big reason behind, it's really two-pronged. you know, there could be multiple reasons for something happening, but I think it's a combination of bad luck in the lower BABIP. And like you said, Bubba, a few more fly balls from Lane Thomas, but I think that can be adjusted. Someone with this type of strikeout rate with non-zero power with a full green light, I think Lane Thomas is a great buy the rest of the way, to be honest.
Yep. I love Lane Thomas. Like, it's, I was surprised to actually see him on this list because I kind of wrote him off. He was hurt for so long, came back, put him in my OC lineup, and I just haven't looked back. I've been pretty happy with the way he's producing. So this almost like the Gene Segura award, but he's actually producing of late, so I don't feel as bad on that one. George Springer is another guy I've started plugging back into lineups of late. On the season, he's only hitting 200, five home runs, BABIP down to 217 from his normal 288, and home run to fly ball down to 9% after his usual 16%. But since May 27th, he's, you know, gotten healthy, started to play regularly again, sitting 252, BABIP's at 237, which is still very low for his norm. I'm not going to try to say that's the end-all be-all, but we're seeing some improvements from Springer. When you look at Springer's profile, I see what stands out. What are you looking at with George Springer?
Yeah, Joe Arrico in the chat. You can walk away for go get a drink of water or something more leaded, maybe, and come back. I think you need to factor in age to this situation as well. Like, George Springer is getting up there, and I think, you know, this stuff starts to decline precipitously as you get into your mid 30s. So I just don't see as many hard hit balls with George Springer. Yes, he makes a ton of contact. The plate skills look good. He's not going to 200 hitter. I think this could be like a 250 guy the rest of the way. But and he hasn't. God, I'm talking myself back into this. He hasn't been thrown out all year. He's 8-for-8 stolen bases. So maybe I'm changing my tune here, mid tune. It's weird that he's got a major jump in ground ball rate. That's
the one that stood out to me. That stood out in a big way to me.
Yeah, I don't know. That's Joe apparently did not follow my advice and go away. He says that boy stinks. But I don't know. I feel like there's some signs of a turnaround for Springer.
He's playing better than Justin Turner, so he's got that going for him.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, sorry, Joe. I had to.
Ouch.
Xander Bogaerts, this has just been a massive disappointment. 219 average, four homers. BABIP's down to 257 compared to 337. Home run to fly ball down to 8% from 12%. I think he's hurt, honestly. I think it's just he's hurt. Yeah, he is. But it's been a disastrous situation for Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah, I don't even know when he comes back. I mean, he's broke his shoulder. So probably someone who I should have excluded from the list, but whatever. I was under the influence of semi-heavy narcotics when building this Bloom board, so.
I forgive you. Austin Riley, the talk of the board, the talk of a lot of, like, I even got two different people messaging me today about what to do with Austin Riley. And we keep saying to stay the course because it's Austin Riley and you're hoping for better days ahead. But man, it's been bleak so far. 230 average, three home runs. BABIP's down to 296 from his 335. Home run to fly ball down to 5%,
dude, from
21%. That is a precipitous, using one of your words, just rubbing off of me, drop with Austin Riley. So when you look at Austin Riley's profile, what stands out? Because batted ball profile isn't that far off. Quality of contact's not that far off. Like, what is going on with Austin Riley?
Yeah, that's not a precipitous drop. That's a
gargantuous drop.
Tumble. I don't know the right word.
It's a Drew Waterfall drop.
God, went back to that.
Oh, you got to bring stuff back. It's always fun.
Yeah, this is like, honestly, this is probably the most shock. Like, I'm more surprised at Austin Riley's power outage than like pre-injury Acuna and what we saw from Acuna. I don't see how this is even possible for someone like Austin Riley, who is one of the premier hitters in baseball for the last three seasons at a peak age, to just totally die like this. There were some comments. I think Michael Cecchini was one of them that responded. Maybe we'll get to those in the listener questions. But like, even on Austin Riley's pulled fly balls, which are the best fly balls to hit for power, the results just have not been there. The quantity has, but the results haven't been there, if I was understanding the tweet right. I just think Austin Riley is too good to be this bad for this long. I don't see, you know, anytime I'm going to bet on 2.5 months of something versus 3 years from somebody with that track record and age, I'm going to bet on the track record every single time. Maybe that's to my detriment, but I think Austin Riley will be fine. It's just the damage has been done. Yep. Big time.
Yeah, you almost have to just ride this one out as you go. I tried to tell
that's
someone.
That's the only thing. Yeah, I mean.
I'll ask you this question. I'll pitch it to you because it's one of the ones that was mentioned to me. Would you trade, just put it in a vacuum format, just say roto format. Would you trade Luis Eel for Austin Riley?
I would rather have Austin Riley the rest of the way. Sure.
That was the discussion point because with Eel likely getting limited at some point sooner than later, that becomes a very interesting question on that one. All right. I don't have a lot to say about Cedric Mullins besides he's got to go. Do you have anything to add to his profile here?
No, other than the fact that I was the, again, we love to admit when we're wrong.
Yep.
I had the min pick on Cedric Mullins in the Rob DiPietro too early, whatever draft back in last August. I took him at the 3-4 turn in that league. So that is eating at me.
It's okay. It could be worse. You could add Yuri Perez and Max Scherzer as your 1-2 with Adbert Alzolay as your closer in your three of your first six picks. So
yeah, I don't know who would do that. That was,
yeah, that's some dumb in like fifth place. Or the defending champion. I don't know. Can't don't know how to phrase that properly.
Defending champ. We'll go with that.
Yeah, I'll go defending champ. Nick Castellanos. This is like another year just going, what are we doing with Nicky Castellanos? 215 average, 9 home runs on the year. You've seen the BABIP go from 335 to 243, which is a massive drop off, of course. And then the home run of fly ball going from 16 to 12%. So that's not a crazy drop off, but that BABIP is a massive situation on our hands here. And I don't know, like every time I want to be optimistic about Castellanos, I'm finding harder and harder ways to convince myself to stay optimistic, Ryan.
He's gotten better lately. So Casty hit 183 with 2 home runs in April. Like that was a terrible, terrible April. In May, it's gone up to 230 with 5 home runs. So there's at least some positive trend there with Castellanos. I don't think this is someone who's – I don't think that aging curve, like I was saying with Springer, watch, are probably the same age. I don't feel like that's there with Castellanos yet.
He's 2 years younger than Springer.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm not totally making things up here. But, yeah, he does feel younger than Springer. I don't know. I'm certainly not – like, Castellanos is such a tough – he's like the Aaron Nola of hitters. Even year, 34 home runs, 29 home runs in 2021 and 23. And then it's odd years. It's even years have been awful. So just a tough one to peg. And I think somebody with the wild, wild plate approach, the Javier Baez-esque plate approach, you are prone to very wild swings in production. So just a very streaky guy. Again, I don't think there's anything else to do with Castellanos. I think you hold him. And again, he's been better in May. And a little bit in June, so that's at least a somewhat positive sign.
Yeah, if you can bench him, that's cool. But hard to drop, that's for sure. Michael Cecchini came back with that quote, Riley's pulling the ball in the air almost as often, but not hitting those batted ball events as hard. 0-for-9 on home runs on pulled fly balls. Last year was 17-for-31.
Yeah. And Corbin Young also responded with, I believe it was inside fastballs that Austin Riley has had trouble with, which would probably... You know, inside fastballs you're pulling, and if you're not getting around on them, you're not having as much success. So that probably coincides with Michael's note there about the pulled fly ball production for Riley. So that's interesting.
For sure. I feel like I'm getting targeted on this one, but we'll say Boba Shed anyways.
Yes.
236 average, 4 home runs.
I just planted this one and made up numbers, actually.
Yeah, it just feels like, you know, him and Xander Bogaerts should have been on the list. 347 BABIP in the past, 270 this season. The home run of fly ball, my God, 17-6%. That's dreadful, folks. That is not going to cut it. Barrel rate's down to 5%, which is the lowest by far of his career. Hard hit rate's still there, though, so that's a plus. So that makes me look too. No, ground ball rate has not changed. So that really makes me concerned on things. So I'll let you have the floor. Have fun. What's wrong with Bo Bichette?
I mean, this is your guy. You give you the floor, right? The contact's still there. I think, if anything, the batting average bounces back in a pretty big way. it's just crazy to be a consistently really good, like 340 BABIP guy for, and this isn't like any kind of small sample. Bo Bichette has done this for over 600 plate appearances every season from 21 through 23. I don't think that just goes away. So I think the batting average actually bounces back quite a bit. the power I'm concerned about and the lack of running game I'm concerned about. Like, we haven't really seen that. Like, yes, Bichette is on a pace for more than five steals, what he had last year, with four already. But like, we are not seeing the peak running game of Bo Bichette, and the power has really dropped, man. Barrel rate's been cut in half, just 10 barrels on those four home runs. So I don't think the counting stats are going to be there, at least in homer steal, but I think batting average rebounds somewhat.
And what I'll say here is, like, almost like since we made that bet, around May 20th is the one I'm looking at here. Bichette's hitting 282 with two of those four home runs. He has seven doubles as well. BABIP's up to 328 over that time. So again, that's like a three week sample, which isn't huge, but it is showing a slow start, going to get it together. It's like, to your point, might hit for average, maybe get you 10 home runs and move on from there, which not the worst season, especially if you already suffered through the beginning of it.
It's also, and I continue to kind of poke at Joe here, but he makes a good point in the chat that for someone like Bichette, where you do have a high batting average, you want to be in a good lineup. That just lets the runs and RBI flourish. And that just, I think that's a big problem. Toronto not being what Toronto has been the last few years this year. It's a bad lineup. And when you rely on that lineup with so many hits to get those runs and RBI, I think that hurts even more.
Yep. I'm with you on that one. Not going to talk Tim Anderson, not going to talk Javi Baez. We will hit up Randy Arozarena here, who we mentioned earlier was out with a hamstring injury, but did pinch hit on Tuesday. So that's promising. We look at Randy, 175 average, eight home runs. Like, he could go 20-20 and hit below 200. It's pretty wild to look at that profile. 332 at a BABIP unusual, 212 this year, which is pretty crazy. Home run to fly ball is about the same, though, 15 to 12%. So it's been a massive drop in BABIP for Randy Arozarena, and that is followed with his barrels and power metrics there. But what do you see with Randy Arozarena that maybe stands out to you? Because a lot of similarities to seasons previous for me.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, the power speed is, I mean, it's there still. Eight homers, seven steals. Like, that's not like elite, but that's a 2020 pace. That's what Randy Arozarena has done two of the last three full seasons that he's been there. It's purely the batting average that has been a total tank. Like, it is, when I say the damage has been done with Austin Riley.
Yeah.
To hit 175 of 264 plate appearances with Arozarena, like, that is a major, major batting average dig. And OBP, the OBP hasn't really been there either. As I know, since Randy's on my Tout Wars team, but going forward, like, just a minor uptick in strikeout rate. Like, I think most of this is just low BABIP. And when I don't, I said, see,
since June 1st, 12% K rate. Like, he's,
I don't know.
I'm optimistic.
You hate to be lazy and just say, oh, it's going to bounce back. But like, you just see a minor uptick in K's. And like you said, Bubba, the K rate has been a lot better lately. The batted ball profile looks fine. The power, like the hard hits, just barely down a little bit. So like, maybe this isn't prime Arozarena, but like, this is a 250, 240 hitter, not 175.
Exactly. This
comes back. So,
yep. I take him over Castellanos the rest of the way. I'll tell you that much. So,
Him over Mullins. What about Lane Thomas?
No, I'll take Lane Thomas still. I still think he's the better guy in that one. Okay. But weirdly enough, might be a better lineup than Tampa Bay, too.
Yeah.
Production wise. That's true. Like, weirdly enough. So,
Washington's not awful.
Yeah. So that's interesting as well. Before we get to listener questions, while we're on the Bloom board, Adam Lee had a good one here that I think was fitting for now. If I'm seeing this correct, the total percentage of drop in home run to fly ball is wider than the gainers in home run to fly ball. Could this be related to whatever seems to be lowering pitching ERA and ratios in 2024?
Yeah, that's a really good observation, Adam. And I think that is not by mistake. The league-wide home run to fly ball rate, I mentioned this kind of earlier, was, I think, is down from like 12 to 10% from last year. But even like 21 through 22, I wish I could pull up the numbers, but like, home run to fly ball league-wide has been down. So if you say someone has had a 2% drop in homer to fly ball, that's actually like on par with the rest of the league. So it makes the homer to fly ball improvers even that much more impressive when they're improving at a time where the ball is in this state and everyone else is kind of falling back. I mean, to make like the golf reference, it's like shooting one under when everyone else is three over. It's kind of that type of deal. So I know the US Open's on my mind, but yep. That's a really good observation.
Yep, no, it makes a lot of sense. Uncle Ted had an observation earlier, a whole lot of righties in the red, a whole lot of lefties in the green too. Like, that's an interesting situation potentially on that one. Like, are lefty pitchers getting better than righty pitchers? A lot of different ways to potentially look at that.
I have no idea, but that's an interesting question.
Yeah, could be something off the wall type of situation on that one. All right, speaking of listener questions, we got a few of them for tonight's show. Uncle Ted, let me scroll up first. We'll get to you in a minute, Uncle Ted. Bran C had a question. Why do players always homer on my bench in one scoring period and then go hitless? Yeah, with you. I talked to Ryan before the show about Taylor Ward. We're all over this one. Don't you worry.
The fourth law of fantasy baseball.
Yep, yep. But his actual question, he's worried about Schneider. Sits two out of three, and or Jose Miranda, who sits the last two moving forward. Who should be more worried about? The Miranda thing blows my mind because he was playing every day, even when Lewis came back, and now he's out again, like, first 2 days this week. I'm more worried about Jose Miranda, to be honest.
I am too. I am more worried about Jose Miranda. I just don't think he's as good as Davis Schneider. And like the thing you could hang your hat on with Miranda was playing time, especially when it was Julian getting sent down when Royce Lewis came back instead of Miranda. So it's pretty weird to see Miranda start to lose playing time. So I'm more worried about him than Schneider.
Yeah, I'm really bummed about that one. That's for sure. John Russell says, got to talk about David Dahl having two homers and six at bats. No, we don't. But I mentioned it just for you.
And that David Dahl, hold on a sec. Come on.
Did it, Ryan.
I was researching this the other day for an HQ article. David Duvall,
U.S. Open.
Dude, I am in golf. I am in golf mode. David Duvall. Like, that's actually a decent comp, cross-sport comp.
Once highly
regarded has turned to nothing. I think David Duvall is broadcasting now. Where did I see this?
He's broadcasting.
I'm going to miss it. In whatever league David Dahl was in, he was, I think, first or second in the minors in OPS.
Wasn't it independent, like Pioneer League or something?
No, it was like AAA, dude.
I thought he was playing independent ball for some reason before he got picked up by the Phillies, but I could be wrong.
I can't find it now.
Yeah, it's all good. Uncle Ted says, when it comes down to it, which do you all prefer, right-handed bats or left-handed? I'll take left-handed for the strong side of platoon all day long.
Well, and we're lefties, man.
Yep. And based on the chart we just looked at, apparently lefties are having better gains this year. So
lefties, yeah. All things equal, you're probably going to get more starts as a lefty because there are more right-handed pitchers than lefties.
No on Twitter, at F This App says, is Austin Riley, I made that PG for the show, folks. Is Austin Riley still hurt? He could be. Maybe that's why he's not getting around the pitch quick enough. I was thinking that when we talked about it, but it'd be crazy if he still is, but I don't think he is, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it would explain a lot, but I don't think so.
Apparently, like, Tatis came out and just said Jerickson Profar has been dealing with the knee injury for a month. He's been, like, kudos to him for playing this whole time. Like, so this goes back to you. You know, you write your speculator article about guys playing with injuries and stuff. How many guys are sitting there doing this day in and day out and just are fancy injured?
They play six baseball games every week. Everyone's banged up at some
exactly.
point.
It's nuts. Michael Cicchini says, of course, Kwan is thriving. Question, Riley is the weirdest. Here's his results. Okay, we pretty much talked about that. The pulled fly balls in 2023 versus 2024.
That's a good pull, no pun intended.
Very, very, yeah, very well said, Mr. Bloomfield. I'm proud of you on that one. That is all I have for listener questions. Unless I missed something, I will double check real quick. But any final thoughts as we're wrapping up another wonderful edition of Bubba and the Bloom talking a fun Bloom board, a new Bloom board for the show.
Yeah, a new one this year. I don't think we've done this one before. So enjoy talking through that. I don't have too much else. Just go back to the medicine cabinet. Watch some U.S. Open. Who's your, since I can't imagine too many folks are listening, who's your U.S. Open pick right now?
Who do I think wins? Scotty
outside, non-Scotty. Yeah. Come on.
Non-Scotty. I like Morikawa. Morikawa, that iron play that he's got going right now could be fun. Matsuyama's my one and done because I've used up all the big dogs. But,
I'm going to go Bryson and one and done.
That'd be awesome.
I want to pick Hovland. But he had such a bad weekend at Memorial. I don't know.
He was my one. He was our one and done. Didn't you take him last week or no?
No, I took.
I had him in one and done last week, and that was brutal. That was brutal.
I'm looking forward to watching it though. So
carnage.
Yeah, it'll be absolute carnage. I've seen the my least favorite videos at majors now is when someone drops the ball in the rough and it's like nowhere even near the fairway anyway. But I saw a bunch of videos today of people dropping the ball in the green. And it just rolls like 30 yards away. It's going to be awesome.
Yep. It's going to be pure chaos. It's going to be beautiful. But thanks everybody for listening. Chat, you were great. Once again, I would love, like, it really helps having the fun chat this time of year. We're halfway through the season. People are going football mode. So to have you guys hanging out is always great. Yes. Really late in the evening. It's freaking 1:12 on the East Coast right now. So it's great having you guys here. Keep them coming Tuesdays and Thursday nights. We'll be back with you guys this Thursday to preview week 13 Fab. That's just nuts saying out loud that we're this far through.
Halfway.
We'll get you going through another week of Fab action here. But until then, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick, and this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 142. Catch y'all next time. Thank you.